This is Morning Crossfire on 99.3 Nigeria Info.
Today's is number one talk station, 99.3 Nigeria Info, Lagos, Nigeria. Brilliant morning to you. It's 13th day of March, 2023. I'm Sheriff Quadri. The last 2 hours of the Morning Crossfire, because we're starting now and we're ending by 10. It's the extended version of the Crossfire. Usually, Crossfire terminates at 9, but on Monday, we extend it to 10, okay? This morning, we have two-in-one conversation. One, we're going to discuss the cash crunch issue. And the actual realities on ground right now, what people are going through, and what can be done to salvage things from getting really, really bad. It's bad already, from getting really, really bad. We'll talk about that, and then we'll talk about the brand of politics that we have accepted as a people, the tagging, the tribal sentiment, the religious sentiment, our own brand now of politics, what that will do to our political minds, political emancipation as a people, whether it will unite us more or divide us more. We'll talk about that in the second part of our conversation. So you're welcome to join. We're streaming live right now on Facebook and on YouTube, Nigeria Info 99.3. I'm being joined right now in the studio by the news manager, Cool FM, Wazobia FM, Nigeria Info FM, Ufoma Igbamuno. He joins me in the studio. Ufoma, once again, good morning to you.
Hi, Sheriff. What did you bring back for me from the UK?
Plenty. It's plenty.
Don't give me bobo gist, though. Let's finish show first.
Let's finish show first. How are you doing?
Well, I'm good. Counting down until I start my leave. You are not the only one who we go on leave. Look at you. You ran away. thinking you will avoid the governorship election. INEC say, take! Wagba! You are coming back to it. You know anything.
Look, I'm honored. I'm glad that INEC kept the election for me.
You look at
so me. I'm very happy that INEC said, look, do it when Sheriff is around. So yeah, we're gonna do the elections on Saturday. But are you looking forward to it though?
Yes and no. I think that the postponement is a bit of a good thing. Because I think it will help tone down a bit of the rhetoric, yeah. You know, which was immediately after the presidential election on the 25th, the week after, you know, the 2 weeks after, that's 2 weeks ago and last week, they were not for want of a better word, they were not great, especially here in Lagos. I know we're going to talk about that, you know, on the show.
Yes,
the rhetoric was horrible from all sides. We saw ethnicity, you know, being placed on the front burner. The people that own Lagos, you know, say, oh, this is our Lagos, this is not your Lagos, you know, and the people that say, oh, no, we are going to take over Lagos, you know, all of those rhetorics, and it wasn't nice. It wasn't cool at all. And maybe we could have been on the verge of, you know, something terrible. But thankfully, I think that the postponement, even though it was not the reason, has sort of reduced that fire and brimstone, you know, not literally, but that was being thrown.
It was really scary.
It was scary. I was scared. I have to be honest. I was scared. Because you know that in Nigeria, it doesn't take much for crisis to just happen. Just a little boom, and you know, thugs would join in.
What? Where could that have led us?
I feared it could have led us to Rwanda.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That bad?
I was that scared. And this is me being as honest as I can be. I was that scared because it wasn't funny. You know, the language, you know, that was being employed. And you would think that, oh, it's people in the grassroots or the non-educated people. But sadly...
No, that convo was everywhere.
That's what I'm about to say. Sadly, you and I, educated folks, yeah. Sheriff, It was so bad, even those of us who are journalists, it was that bad.
Yeah,
actually. We that were supposed to be quote unquote impartial. The rhetoric from some of us was really, it wasn't cool.
That's what got me worried the most, because it was everywhere. On TV,
radio,
in online, papers, online. It was everywhere.
Market Square, village gathering. It was literally everywhere. It was our Lagos versus who take over. Come on. You know, for me, I keep saying this. Lagos is a cosmopolitan city. You are not going to run away from that. Lagos was the former federal capital of the country. It meant that it was a meeting point for everybody. As far back 50, 60, 70, yeah. 80 years yeah. ago, you know, you're not going to change that. So Lagos is the when you see Lagos is like it's like Nigeria. Mm. You have everybody, and I mean everybody. That's not to say that there were no original inhabitants of the land, or that the you don't have people who are from Lagos.
Yeah,
think
they are aborigines.
I think one of the worst things to happen to us is, you know, the late Agui Ironsi's creation of states, you know, just after the first 1966 coup. I think it's one of the worst things to happen to us as a country, because it made us more divided than we were before it. You know, such that Ufume Gbamuno, who is born and to some extent brought up in Lagos, in a way cannot claim to be a Lagosian, you know, because I'll be asked, are you from here? And it's not just a Lagos thing, it's everywhere.
I was gonna say that Ufuma,
it's everywhere.
That whether this has highlighted one of our major problems, because in some states, we're talking about Lagos, in some states other people cannot even own a house there. They cannot even own a land. They can't own a property.
Sheriff,
there are some businesses that they can't do in states here in Nigeria. We're not having that conversation yet, and this is just coming up now. And
I'll give you a good example. I was born here in Lagos. My dad, God bless his soul, late now, he was a Nigeria Customs Service officer. He was transferred just before my third birthday to Imo State, so the family had to move to Imo State. And I literally grew up there, nursery, primary, secondary school. In my JS2, this was 1992 or thereabout, remember that was the beginning of the Third Republic, we just had elected state governors and all that, there was a policy change. So for persons with disability like me, usually, naturally, you have free education up until at least secondary school. It was a nationwide thing.
Right.
Guess what? The new government came in. I think it was it Fabian Usuji? I'm not sure again. Or Evan Enwerem, the former, I think it was Evan Enwerem. I can't really remember again, you know, who was governor at the time. And they changed the policy. The policy was now, you have to be an indigene of Imo State to be able to
access free education.
That free education for, remember, persons with disability. And in GS2, we're all invited to the capital, Owerri. And my father took me there and we're told point blank, sorry, you're from Delta State. If you want to access free scholarship for PWDs, you have to go and get it from Delta State. And that's how the supposed free scholarship I was supposed to have didn't work out again.
And that's how far back they started.
1992. I'm telling you, that's 20, 30, 31 years ago. Thankfully, my parents were well-to-do. Thankfully. Now, imagine a scenario where I didn't have parents. That's how I would have stopped school at GS2. That's how, you know. So when I say it's everywhere, I'm not just leaving it to Lagos. It is a big problem, which is why, you remember my first statement, one of the worst things to happen to us is this creation of states, this state origin nonsense, because that's what I call it, you know, such that you can't do certain things here, you can't do certain things there, because people will come back and remind you that, you are not from this state. I think it's atrocious. You know, you remember the case of some years ago, the was it commissioner, you know, whose
the lady commissioner.
Yeah, I think it was commissioner of judiciary. I can't remember again, from Imo State and Abia State.
I think chief judge or something.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, there was that issue, oh, you're not from this state, you have to go back to your state. Guess what? Imo and Abia were one state before. Abia State was created out of Imo State, you know. I think there was the issue of Governor Akeredolu's wife
being from the south,
I think she's from Imo State, and she wanted to contest as senator or something. And all of those issues popped up. So it's not just a Lagos thing; it's everywhere. The point is that politicians always find ways to bring out these fault lines that we have when it gets to election period. And it's sad that some of us, you know, or most of us, have decided to join them in their narrative, hook, line, and sinker.
Right. Well, Fama, let's take this further a little bit, because, and I'm going to take it from where you stopped. Some of us take this hook, line, and sinker. Well, this conversation, this latest one, it looked as though it was all of us who swallow it. Even some of us who are enlightened get drawn into it while you're trying to explain to people, like, look, this is now to, and they keep, before you know it, you are into the conversation.
Sadly.
And you start arguing back and forth.
Sadly.
So it looked,
in our WhatsApp group.
Do you understand? So it looked as though all of us have been brought in into this conversation. And then that takes me to whether we are even politically aware of what or how politics should be played, or this is how it should be played in a very heterogeneous society as ours.
Sheriff, the honest truth is that as a result of mismanagement of the entire country since the 60s, a lot of us first don't identify as Nigerians. So we first of all identify as our tribe. One of the things that annoy me the most when I have conversations, especially online, you know, maybe I'm not seeing the person, is this penchant to ask, so what state are you from? It annoys me, but oh well, I have to answer. Because again, I think it's because of how much I've traveled, especially in southern Nigeria. I've lived across almost everywhere, you know, in the regions. I was born here, left at the almost age of 3, grew up in the southeast, stayed here till I was 18, came back to Lagos, you know, stayed for about 10 years, got admission, schooled in the South, Delta State to be precise, you know, came back to Lagos again, worked for a few years here, and then joined the Kuwazobia Info family and went to Port Harcourt. So I would say that I've lived in the Southeast, I've lived in the South, I've lived in the Southwest. It has opened my eyes, you know, to how diverse we actually are. One of the problems we have is that people don't move around. So people are just boxed in their locality. So they see the world, or their worldview is from where they are. If you were born in Ekiti, for example, and you've never left Ekiti, nursery school, primary school, secondary school, university, even NYSC, all in Ekiti State, you will not appreciate the issues an Igbo man in Anambra is aggrieved about. You will not appreciate what the Niger Delta man is complaining about, oil spillage. You will not understand what, you know, the Hausa man in Kano is talking about, because your worldview is narrow. It's just centered around your surroundings, which is again one of the reasons NYSC, you know, the scheme NYSC, you know, was put out.
Yeah.
It was to make us integrate, and trust me, it has its issues a lot.
Yeah.
We will talk about that later on, but I think one of the best things from NYSC is that it makes people leave their locality and see what's happening.
Ask people who've gone to on NYSC, they will tell you the immense benefit that they've derived.
Trust me, you know, because it makes you understand that, oh, what I used to think about the Fulani man is probably not what is the reality. You know, the impression I had about the Igbo man is not how it is. Or somebody who has, if I used to yab some of our colleagues in Port Harcourt, remember that. Mm. All of my life, I put a cotton idea, and I don't know what's going to happen elsewhere. And it makes you think that the world revolves around that axis. Mm. The very moment you leave your Ikwere land, you know, in River State, and come to Oshogbo, for example, and stay 1 year, and understand the issues that the Yoruba man is facing out there in Oshogbo, it will make you think properly. And trust me, for the number of persons, it's not everybody, but the number of persons who have had these experiences, you find that most times they are the few
who they are the very few
who are not, don't get drawn in all of this tribal sentiment. But back to my original statement, as a result of many factors, many of us Nigerians first of all identify as Igbo, Hausa, Fulani, Efik, you know, Isoko. I'm Isoko, but sometimes I would even argue some people call me Ifoma, which has absolutely no relation with Ifoma, my name. But I would even say I agree that I'm more Igbo than Isoko. I barely speak my language, 30-40%. I can read and write in Igbo, like literally. Mm. At least I passed WAEC in Igbo. I had a C6. You know, I can read and write in Igbo. You know, I speak passable Yoruba. By the time we came back to Lagos, I was already done with secondary school. My neighbors who should have taught me Yoruba, they always wanted to speak English. It's my younger ones, you know, who had to finish the secondary school in Lagos. Everybody in my house speaks Yoruba. Like everybody. I'm the only one who is still struggling, you know. But the point is, imagine a scenario where I can speak. My mom speaks perfect Igbo, perfect Yoruba. My mom grew up in Ijesha, actually. You know, back when we were growing up, if my parents want to discuss anything in the house and they don't want us to hear, they switch to Yoruba because they know we will not hear. Do you understand? So imagine me having that kind of background and upbringing where, yes, I'm Isoko, Delta State, you know, but I can speak Yoruba, I can speak Igbo, I've lived around these persons. I truly understand our fault lines, but there are very few people like me, sadly.
Yeah, and that brings me to our next conversation. So how do we strengthen the integration? Because obviously, we have not integrated well. That's why very few people can exaggerate these fault lines to make it look like we've got a problem. Maybe we have a problem, but maybe if we had managed our diversity pretty much well, this can impact our politics and how we play politics as well. Because I'm looking like a place like France or Germany or the US or the UK, you know, where diversity isn't much of a problem, where it doesn't matter where you're from. If you met some criteria, you are freely and able to be elected into public offices. And this is what we're lacking. We have come to that point where we want to claim, we want to claim that as against having the interest of the collective at heart when it comes to governance, when it comes to democracy. That will be our next focus when we return. Lagos, stay with us. When we return as well, we'll open up the telephone lines to hear your no questions, just your thoughts on our conversation, this first part, when we return. Stay here, Lagos. We'll be back.
More news and information coming up. We'll be back in a moment.
99.3. It's been 8:33. It's been a very frank conversation on the show today. We're just here to say things the way, you know, they are. Because looking at it from this side, if we don't try and call ourselves back, we could as well be heading for a great calamity and the brand of politics that we've decided to embrace. Because trust me, I read a comment while we're on break when someone said that this is not the brand of politics that we chose. It was imposed on us. And I said, look, nobody can impose on you what you don't want. You can reject it. If it's politics, you can decide not to join them too. That's why people form political parties with different ideologies and all. So nothing can be imposed on you when it comes to politics. You can decide, you know, to choose what brand of politics that you want to play, you know. But then welcome back to the show. It's Morning Crossfire. I'm Sheriff Quadri. Ufoma Egbamuno is our news manager here on Nigeria Info, and he joins me in the studio this morning. Ufoma, before I come to you though, let's hear quite a number of people have listened to you and they'd like to share their thoughts, and the calls are coming in already.
Just to correct, I actually made an error earlier, you know, when I talked about Agiyuransi creating state. It was actually the man who took over from him.
Okay.
General Yakubu Gowon, okay. You know, who created this, is not Agiyuransi. I needed to make that correction. But point I was trying to make again is that it's the beginning
that
of
action.
That action, you know, the beginning of the problems that, you know, we now see today.
Mm, indeed. Now let's hear what people think about the brand of politics that we have embraced. Because look, whether we want to accept or deny, we seem to have embraced that brand of politics, and it's divisive more than uniting. 01-277-0993, 277-1993, 277-2993, and 277-3993. Or call the smart number 0700-993-993-993. Female-only line is 01-465-7190. I'll call that female line again, 01-465-7190. For female callers. Good morning to you.
No, good morning, Mr. Ferry.
Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes. See, Ferry, you said it some time ago, we have this discussion, even with Remimo when she was still there. This case still brings me back in the sense that, like we women now, we don't even have a say. To be sincere, it's a sheriff. I'm from the north, and I got married to a Delta man. It's okay for that reason. So, me coming out tomorrow, I don't even know where I belong now.
It's really sad.
If I go to Delta State and I said I want to acquire any political, no, tell me you go back to the north and go and meet your people.
Sadly.
And if I go to my father's place, my dad will tell me, my dad will tell me you are married.
Go back.
Go to your father's place, to your husband's
place. It's unfortunate.
So it's really a big issue, please. We need to just adjust. See, what I know as a woman, once you are married, stay in your husband's place. I asked my husband this question also, said, okay, so you meet my daughter now. Tomorrow she comes out and says she wants to become something in Delta State. They'll say, because your mom is from the north, you cannot. But also, they cannot even try it. So that is it. You have to really get it right.
Yes, we have
really,
to.
Really get it right.
We have
yes.
to.
Thank you.
We have to. Thank you for calling me. Nigeria Info, good morning to you.
Hello.
Good morning.
Mr. Sheriff, this is Joy.
Welcome, Joy. Welcome.
Ufoma, you're very good. I like your analysis.
Thank
you.
You're
on point, as always.
That's why we're paying you that much
thank
money.
You for paying
you. You're not paying me.
Who is number one Nigeria, though? See, you're even my in-law, Ufoma.
Oh, really?
I'm married to a so-called person.
Wow.
That's a Elu for that.
That's just immediately after my village. I'm Uzoro.
You see now. So, you see now, if I say I want to go to my village now to go and vibe, that's just like the last caller. They will pursue me and say, go back to Delta, you are married, though. When I go to Delta, I say, no, you are not born here. You know. So, I think it is the constitution in all. That is where we have this problem.
Okay.
Our constitution needs to be totally changed. Let it be a constitution of the people where we can sit down and say this is how we actually want to live as a country. For me, I will actually advocate for regional government, you know, where everybody can, you know, develop. I think that development will be there. All these things, people say, I stayed in Lagos all my life, I only went to the East for my university days, and after that, here I am. My NYC, I said I wasn't going to redeploy because I've never been to the North before. I served in Bauchi. So you see, all this since. I don't know what's actually going on because I think our politicians are the ones who are actually sowing this seed of
ethnicity,
whereby they see they are not working. Things are not working well for them. They sow the seed of ethnicity or they sow the seed of religion. So that is the more reason why I say our constitution, we need, it's not an amendment issue. We need to do a total overhauling of the constitution, whereby it will be a big crime if you tell anybody, oh, you are from here, and because of that, that is it. In fact, that's an incitement. In fact, it's reasonable. When we see things like that, you know, I think we'll have changes. If you say it's of the mind, though, this mind, though, I'm telling you, it's not going to work.
Thank you, Joy.
Like 10 programs tomorrow, it's not going to work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Margaret has been on the line for some time now. Margaret, are you still with us?
Yes, hi, Sherry.
Oh, thank you for holding.
Good
thank
morning,
you.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I just wanted to say that as a people, I don't know how we got to this pass where religion and ethnicity is how we define ourselves. But I also, apart from the political class, I want to hold the media, especially the non-regulated media, the new social media, the bloggers responsible for some of this. They're recycling old videos, they're recycling portions of videos that are inciting, you know, general misinformation just to make their case for their paymasters or for the candidates of their choice. Everyone is free to have a candidate that he supports. But don't push a narrative that could disturb the peace and the balance in the polity.
Right.
If you do that, we don't have anywhere to go.
Right.
The problem is most of these bloggers don't even live in the country. And you see people in diaspora, they're sending you WhatsApp images and videos of hot places. Some of the videos are outdated. Some are not even in Nigeria. We see videos of things happening in other countries. They say, oh, this happened in Nigeria. Nobody can substantiate it. I'm sorry, but I think some form of censorship is required on the new media. Else, they'll throw the whole place into chaos. And then if, as a people, we can't learn to live in love. Look at little kids in kindergarten. They don't care where you come from.
They don't care. They don't care.
They don't care. They just hug each other, they play, and they go home. And then as they go, as a child, I could only speak English and Igbo language. I'm from Lagos. I couldn't speak Yoruba. I learned how to speak Yoruba in secondary school because I attended a federal government girls' college in the Southwest. And guess what? Neighbors would say to me, are you a Yomiri? Chinyomiri Nieni. Because it was that word that made me research what it meant, and then I understood it was a derogatory term. So when people would say it to me, I said, don't call me your Mary, I'm my daddy's daughter. You know, those are the kind of things that our parents did, and we need to stop. We don't need to continue with this cycle of ignorance. We really need to stop it. You guys are doing a good job, but as a whole, the media can do better.
The media can do better. I agree.
And all of us as individuals,
I agree.
Let's be human beings first. Religion, ethnicity, those things don't matter. After all, I'm married to somebody from the South. I have Hausa people in my family. I have Igbo people in my family. So when we start dividing along ethnic lines, are we going to do the same in our families? We don't do it, and then we do it to outsiders. We need to stop. And the politicians need to stop using it as a tool. If they continue, then we need to teach them that those are not tools of disunity, but tools of our unity. Thank you, guys, and have a great morning.
Thank you. Thank you. Have a great one yourself. And Ufoma, you'd like to react to what Margaret said?
Well, they've actually been spot on, you know. Sheriff, it's a long road. It's a long road because, again, these politicians know how to play this divisive politics. The state government is not going to feign ignorance, you know, that they don't know. Allegedly, they commissioned some influencers, you know, to put out some of these divisive narratives, allegedly. Yes, great thing the governor on his TV interview last week condemned it, you know. I thought that he was a little late, but he should have done that a lot earlier. But he's not going to feign ignorance, you know, that some of his party members did not add to the fire we're talking about. Neither is the opposition also going to feign ignorance, you know, that some of their supporters, you know, also lit the fire for all of these nonsense, you know. And like, I think it was last week on the show,
absolute
was it 2 weeks ago?
Nonsense.
You know, when I talked about how usually it never used to be a problem. It used to be something we say in local parlance, you know, when we see Lagos is a no man's land. Ideally, it should not be a problem. However, the way it has been interpreted or the way it's been put out, you know, especially in the build up to the elections, you know, makes it insulting to the original owners of Lagos. Because if I'm from Lagos, for example, see, argue with all what you want to argue about creation of states and the
federal capital status
the point is that Lagos is still someone's state. So if you're going to come to my state and say Lagos is a no man's land, I can come and do anything I like, I will feel offended. I definitely will be angry, you know. So I think we need to stop that narrative.
Is it an understanding problem or is it deliberate mischief? Because, look, you know, we said this, we usually say this off air, that, look, especially this particular argument, right, if you're not careful, you can't defend or oppose, you will be misinterpreted.
True.
If you stay too long on this conversation, somebody will say that you are being biased.
Exactly.
The other person will say that, no, you are being biased.
Yeah.
You know, so you can't stay too long on this conversation.
It's hard to not get... I've tried as much as possible to avoid a lot of these conversations, especially on WhatsApp groups, you know, because like you said, there's no way you're going to go about it without somebody somewhere accusing you of favoring one aspect of the narrative or the other, you know. But again, it's our job here to say as it is.
That's right.
All my life, you know, my rule is I look you in the eyes and I'll tell you how I think it is. I don't care. You know, I do it. You will. Some will like it. Some will like it. But if my conscience is clear, then I'm good. You know, I like to look people in the eyes and tell them the truth. Lagos is a no man's land. Ideally, should not be a problem, because Lagos is the one state or the best state in the country where you know that you have opportunities. You know that. You might be struggling elsewhere, but if you come to Lagos and you know what you're doing and you're hardworking, opportunity will meet your hard work and you most likely would excel. Let's not even kid about it. It is what it is. And again, it's not a function only of state governments. It's a function of the fact that Lagos State has been, you know, a cosmopolitan city for over 100 years. And also that Lagos State is the federal capital, or was the federal capital. And so a lot of the businesses, you know, and commercial activities were centered right here. Abuja has been capital since 1991, but Lagos is still regarded as the commercial nerve center of the country.
That's right.
It means that every bank has its headquarters here. Almost every company have their head. The ones that didn't have moved down here. So it gives people opportunity. So in that sense, you could argue that, yes, Lagos is a no man's land. But sadly, I think it's a mixture of both mischief and misinterpretation. You know, such that when that term is being used now, it's used in such a way as to say, oh, don't worry, whether you like it or not, I'm coming to, quote unquote, take over. And for some persons, that feels demeaning. Again, the other side of the narrative is, I find it a bit ridiculous that someone from Osun or your state, you know, who is also not from Lagos, is also angry that someone from Imo State is calling Lagos a no man's land. You know, so there's no side of the divide that will come out in that you congratulate them at the end of it. Everybody has got a fault. So I would rather say Lagos is a cosmopolitan city, because you find everybody, and I mean everybody. The same way you go to Abuja, the original inhabitants of Abuja,
they are still there.
They are still angry.
They are still there.
They are. You can't count the number of times over the last 30, 31 years that you've heard them either come out on a protest or argue about something and say, you know what, it's only one senator we have. That senator must come from It must be us.
Yeah.
The person that just won the senator elect in Abuja, I think has Yoruba roots.
I think, yeah.
Iriti Kingibe. You know, I'm not sure anybody has told her,
you are not from here.
Go to your father's land. So we should admit the fact that both Lagos and Abuja are the only two cosmopolitan cities we have. I hear some people say, what you're doing here, can you do it in Kwara State? Can you do it in Enugu? No, you can't do it because Enugu is not a cosmopolitan city. Is the simple analogy. Enugu is not as cosmopolitan. Ilorin is not as cosmopolitan. Yola is not as cosmopolitan as Abuja or Lagos. It is what it is. However, we also need to apply caution. Because this narrative will get us nowhere. The politicians will take advantage of it, and those narratives have been sold.
I wanted to ask you the impact of this narrative on politics and how we play politics.
Good and bad. So after the results of the presidential election, surprisingly, the Labour Party won. To be honest, I didn't see that coming. I remember we said this a week before the election. I said that the Labour Party was going to do well in Lagos. I said that PDP would not do well at all, you know, because it was obvious to me at the time. What I didn't actually see coming was Labour Party
winning.
Now, if you believe some of the reports from the opposition parties, the report is that allegedly the Labour Party actually won Lagos with a wider margin than what was announced. Now, whether that is true or not, we would have to wait for INEC, you know, to tell us. But if you believe those reports, that sent a bit of a warning signal. Matter of fact, a lot of the APC folks were scared. The national youth leader of the APC, Dayo Israel, came out on Twitter a few hours later and was literally ranting. Literally, he had to delete that tweet. He put out a threat to... a seeming threat, I would say, to officials of the Lagos State government. You know, he said, anybody who is an official of the Lagos State, you have to deliver your ward or your local government. You can't be collect. That's how scared, you know, some of the APC folks were. And to a large extent, I think that was the genesis of, maybe not the genesis, but
the tribal politics.
That sort of influenced... It was there before. It's not like it wasn't there. It was there before. Maybe a bit on a low key. But losing Lagos to the Labour Party more or less caused a bit of an issue. Again, the ruling party in Lagos, I would say they've been lackadaisical. Great thing that the governor, Sanwo-Olu, has been... We've seen his campaign, you know, for re-election.
Intensified.
Gone a bit... I don't know. It's like
you can't.
Okay, it's like the headphones was having issues, so I couldn't hear myself very well. We've seen his campaign go up a notch, and I think it's a good thing because prior to the presidential election, the governor had this, I would say, arrogant feel to his campaign. It was more like, "It's a done deal. Not to worry. We're going to get re-election. Ah, it's our state. We've been ruling this state, you know, since 1999. And he was literally, I would say, more concerned about campaigning for his principal, the president-elect, Bola Tinubu. You know, jokingly, some of us in the newsroom, you know, are saying that, oh, it's like Sanwo-Olu is the PA to Tinubu. Because literally, he was literally going everywhere. I did not, to a large extent, see him going everywhere in Lagos to campaign for himself. But the presidential election results from 2 weeks ago more or less opened their eyes to the fact that, it's not Uhuru yet, just as we thought it was. There was also the narrative that, it was a question of non-indigenes, mostly Igbo guys, you know, that voted for...
But that's a false one. And they've realized that now.
So it's not entirely false, but it's also not the only truth. Traditionally, non-indigenes in Lagos State have not voted.
Traditionally,
Most of them have not voted for the APC or the ACN or the AD, whatever nomenclature they've had since 1999. That's traditionally. You don't expect that to change in 2023. It did not change. However, the one thing the APC also failed to realize is that even their supposed voters, even the persons who naturally vote for them, some have gotten tired. A lot of persons that voted for the Labour Party are also Yoruba people. You know, so it was not just about a tribe.
And also
thing.
Had new voters.
And thank you. That's another part. That's another part they failed to see clearly. There were loads and loads of people who voted 2 weeks ago that have never voted their life.
That's right.
Why do you think they came out? They are tired. They are frustrated. The country is a mess. Let's not try to
talking about the country is a mess. Ufoma, let's head out. We'll take the news. When we return, we'll talk about how messy the situation is in terms of the cash crunch. We'll leave this conversation about tribal politics here, and what we'll just do is to implore you to re-examine what determines who you vote for, your political choice, your candidate, whether you're placing this on tribal sentiment or the actual capability of the person. That's coming up, Cash Crunch, next at 9. Stay here. And then the Cash Crunch. And it's looking like the 1 hour was not even enough for this thing. But regardless, we're going to move on to the Cash Crunch conversation. But maybe I should hear Ufoma's final take on, you know, the our brand of politics. Because our politics is even way beyond tribal politics. Sometimes we play religious politics as well. I mean, we just have this. Let me get your final thought on that. Before we move on to the cash crunch issue.
So my final thoughts will be that we should first of all remember that, you know, one of the callers said it, that we're human beings first, you know, and think about the consequences of some of our actions. If you, sadly, history was taken out of our curriculum for a number of years, so people don't read or people don't know, go just put on your smartphone, Rwandan genocide. Read about it if you don't know anything about it, and understand how, you know, tribal politics can end up wiping out almost a whole tribe, you know, in a country, and how thankfully they've been able to deal with the issues. But I think we should also learn from Sheriff, as we wrap up, I think we should learn from the Rwanda episode. Rwanda faced their fears. They didn't sweep it under the carpet like we've done in Nigeria. You know, they faced their fears. They discussed the issues that led them to where they were in 1994.
Right.
And told themselves, okay, you know what? This is why we went here. This is why we had this fight. We're not going to go here anymore. But in Nigeria, the issues that led to the first military coup in 1966, the counter coup 6 months later, which ultimately led to the civil war that wiped out.
Meanwhile, all of these things are connected.
You said they're connected.
Is the
genesis?
When
thing.
I heard the story, because what you hear around are just part stories, angles of these stories that favor
one
tribe,
favor
that tribe. Everybody now propagates, tell their unborn children and their children's children their own side.
God bless you. So that's it. The issues we're having right now started in the 50s and 60s. You know, it's what led to the civil war. We fought that war. We eliminated almost 3 million, in fact, reportedly about 1 million people, let me not say 1 million, a number of people from the Southeast were murdered, you know, in other parts of the country, you know, which came from some form of a narrative that the first military coup was to eliminate some sections and left out some sections. You know, that narrative went on. And some of the things we're saying now in the last 2 weeks was what people were saying back then. And it led to genocide, which led to the war. The problem is that
we have not addressed this.
Thank you. That's why I say we should learn from the Rwanda episode. We said no victor, no vanquished. You know, so we swept a lot of things under the carpet. And which is why you would ask yourself, some would say, no, I cannot vote for someone from the southeastern part of the country. You know, because that fear of domination, that, oh no, if we let them rule, they will divide the country.
Again, that is that fear of that narrative.
Good. That fear of that narrative about a supposed domination, you know.
Because what we have are just narratives, different narratives of different tribes.
The Yoruba man thinks about the Igbo man in a certain way. The Igbo man thinks about the Hausa man in a certain way. That narrative that we refuse to address 50, 60 years ago, is what's still playing out in 2023, because our grandparents have told our parents, sold our parents a narrative, our parents sold that narrative to us, and sadly, some of us are still selling that same narrative to our children. So until, as a nation, we address those fault lines that led us to the civil war, you know, that led us to a fractured state, until we address those issues, it's going to be hard for tribal religious politics to not come into play. Sadly.
Unfortunately. Look, I wish we could go on and on. I mean, this is enough, you know, for this morning on the show. But let's take last words. We're going to take two last words, you know, from the callers before we move on to our Cash Crunch conversation, which we'll have again on Wednesday, by the way. We'll have that again on Wednesday. But let's take just two calls, and we're done. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Sheriff.
Yes, morning to you.
Femi from Surulere.
Welcome, Femi.
Ufoma, good morning. Yes, as Ufoma said, we left a lot of things unaddressed for a very long time, and it's coming back to hurt us. One thing I'm happy about is it seems the generation coming does not accept hook, line, and sinker what we are being told by our predecessors, and we seem to have divergent opinion, though some people still hold on to those traditional opinions. And I think this issue should have been addressed from day one by the National Orientation Agency. But it seems like the National Orientation Agency is just a body that has been there for a very long time doing absolutely nothing. And I think they could push publications in media, print, and
they could sponsor programs.
Exactly, that's what
they
I'm
could,
saying.
They could sponsor documentaries.
We could sponsor movies.
We had big time blockbuster movies.
We had programs as children that we watched as kids back then that showed us that, oh, Hausa man, Yoruba man, Igbo man, Fulani, who lived together harmoniously. And I find out that these narratives do not happen except in politics. A billionaire Yoruba man will employ an Hausa man to be his main security guard. You employ somebody to be your cook who is from another state entirely.
Exactly.
You would have fear of is anything happening to you or somebody poisoning your children or whatever. But it is only when you are going to elect somebody that you remember
that
this person is from so place. And I feel National Orientation Agency has a very big role. They've been dormant for so many years.
Right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your thought. I mean, what he said struck a chord. I wish I were going to get away from this. So what?
It's up to you.
What he said struck a chord. You know why I said so? Because growing up,
anyway, it was quite vibrant.
Oh, my goodness me. Maybe perhaps because we only watched NTA and Radio Nigeria then. Perhaps, just maybe. I'm just thinking out loud. Yeah. So another part of this is that, you know what did us a great, great damage was the fact that history was taken out. I saw a thread on Twitter the other day, and people started arguing about the history, where these people came from, where those people came from, and they were all talking about the same tribe, but they are sharing different history, different stories. That's how bad the situation is. We don't even know our own history. We don't know how our own stories.
If I saw no day radio, eh? The word I would have used, or the sentence I would have used, would have been almost a replica of what someone used early in the morning that you have admonished.
Like,
that's what, because it's a disservice. It's a huge disservice. People, our history might even be far. Some persons don't even know that the president-elect was a senator just 30 years ago. Believe it or not, people do not know that Bola Tinubu was a senator just 30 years ago. They only remember that Bola Tinubu was governor of Lagos State.
Mm.
They don't know that he was elected a senator, you know, in the aborted third republic. Not a lot of persons also remember that the present Minister of Works was actually Chief of Staff.
Mm.
Not governor. Mm-hmm. A lot of people remember him as Governor Fashola.
Yeah.
They did not know that he was Chief of Staff to then Governor Tinubu.
Mm.
So these are little things that you think we take for granted.
Yeah.
But
and these things matter.
They matter. They are very important. I told you. See, I can't get this example off my head. I told you about doing an interview. I would not mention the name of the station, but doing an interview for persons who are supposed to work in a current affairs department, and none. I said none. Okay, one person got it a little, but still was off point. Out of the six persons I interviewed, nobody could say anything reasonable about the Third Republic
guy.
I couldn't for the life of me understand it.
How could you not?
Like, you don't need to be born. Sheriff, I'm here. I can talk about the Second Republic, the fight, quote unquote, between Shagari, Awolowo, Nnamdi Azikiwe. You know, I can tell you about the AG, Action Group as it was known then, you know, Nnamdi Azikiwe's party, and of course the MPN who won. I can tell you about the legal tussle, you know, that happened, the abracadabra that happened to two-thirds of 19 states, you know, and how it was interpreted in a way it probably should not have. Sheriff, I was not old enough. I was not even born when that election took place. The election took place in 1979. I was born a year later. How do I know these things? History. Sadly, at a point in time, some person in Nigeria decided that no, let's take history away from our curriculum, and you see the effects.
We underestimated.
Ah, goodness me.
Our past, and our past is haunting us.
Let me tell you one thing that shocked me in 2019. Do you know that I say this every time and I laugh, but guess what? People buy it. One of the narratives that was sold in the 2019 election up north, allegedly, was that Peter Obi, the then vice president, child candidate of the PDP, was the man who drove the car for Cardinal Nzogu to go kill the prime minister.
And that was sold.
It was a narrative that was sold, allegedly, up north. And guess what? People bought it. The first military coup happened in 1966. I think Peter Obi was born 1951. He was not even old enough to drive a car at the time. But guess what? People bought that narrative. Why? They don't know their history. Because if you know your history, you will know that man was not even born at the time. But guess what? People bought it. And it's one of the reasons people did not vote for his party, the PDP, at the time. That's how easily deceived. And again, one of the callers made a huge point. I'm not for regulation of social media. I think we have enough laws to deal with it. But some of the narratives that are being sold out, I see a lot of things on my timeline and I just shake my head. I respond to the ones I can respond to because it's part of my duty to also ensure that fake news is not sold as the real thing. But how many can we do?
Yeah.
How much can we do? You know, because people will bring up videos from 10 years ago and tell you that it is happening today. And people will buy it because they don't know their history. Now, one of the narratives that was sold in the last 2 weeks is that if a certain governor candidate in Lagos wins, he's going to sack all the civil servants.
I mean, how does that even make... I mean, and people... Oh, goodness.
Sheriff, people bought it. I can tell you that that narrative, as much as a lie as it was, it has changed some people's mindset about voting for that particular candidate. Because how can a governor just wake up and sack all civil servants? It's not possible. The worst that the governor can do is to remove the head of the agency. LASMA, for example, the governor can decide to remove the head of the agency. Yeah. But the governor is not going to sack everybody that works in LASMA. So, again, it boils down to the kind of education we have, which is devoid of history. And so when these things, people don't, when you see reports like that, when you see news like that coming in from WhatsApp groups and all, people don't question it because a lot of us have our bias. So the one that suits the narrative that we like, we take it hook, line, and sinker. When one of my university group, when that narrative of sacking LASMA came up, somebody put it on the board and said, if it's so, I'm not going to vote for so, I'm so personal. I asked the guy a question. That do you think that the governor has the power to just wake up and sack everybody? When I asked him that question, he now said, oh, wait, okay, that's true. Because I asked him. He on his own did not question the news that came up on his phone. Because again, we have biases. And anything biases. Anything that suits our narratives, whether it is true or not, we just go with it.
Indeed. We're going to rest it here. If anybody wants to talk about it still, it's okay. But let's quickly move on to our next conversation that we'll have for about 25 minutes or so. And that is the cash crunch. That issue is going nowhere because it's here. I mean, there's fuel scarcity still there. I know that one is still there. But you see this cash crunch. People can't go to work anymore. People are calling in to tell their ogas that, oga, if you come to work today, I don't get money for
that. Everyone just called me while we were on the break.
I mean, what are you going to do? Like, what choice do you have?
I've literally, in the last 1 week or 2 weeks, I've literally had to sit in for her once or twice, actually, because she couldn't come to work. Why could she not come to work? She doesn't have cash. Go to the bank will tell you, we don't have. They still have some actually giving the old 500 and 1,000 naira notes, but people are not collecting it. And I don't blame the people not collecting it because, again, like I would always say,
the banks
say,
are not taking it from them.
The banks themselves.
So, where are they going to see money to do business?
That's one. Two, we've operated in such a lawless country where we all shout the rule of law when it suits us. Just when it suits us. We want to claim law when it suits us. One of the things that got me angry, you know, when the whole conversations about the Naira redesign policy was going on, was the same ruling party, supporters of the ruling party, who have defended over the last 8 years the president and his actions disobeying court orders, all of a sudden woke up and started shouting at the same president, oh, you must obey the Supreme... By the way, he actually needed to have obeyed the Supreme Court's order. There's no missing one about that. He needs to, because he's not a law unto himself.
Right.
But imagine the hypocrisy. You supported the president when he went to the NBA conference just after he was elected, first time in 2015, and told them that, oh, there's a limit to your human rights. I can decide to suspend it if it affects national security. He said that. And lawyers were clapping for him. NBA conference. I'm not a lawyer, but I couldn't understand that for the life of me. Lawyers clapping for the president, saying he will suspend your human
rights
if it has something to do with national security. In an NBA conference, and people were clapping. That was the danger signal that we should have seen. We didn't see it until it started happening. They went to houses of judges, all in the name of fighting corruption, you know, and did what they did in the middle of the night. People shouted. Some people defended it. Several courts have said, release El Zazaki, release Nnamdi Kanu. What have they done? Have they obeyed those laws or those judgments? No. Then 8 years after, almost 8 years after, just because you think or they thought at the time that the policy did not support or was going to affect them in terms of the presidential election, all of a sudden, the same persons who over the last 8 years, almost 8 years, have defended the president when he was disobeying court orders and are shouting, oh, you must obey the Supreme Court. Is it going to happen overnight? We sowed the seed already. And sadly, like I always say, apart from the US president, I don't know if there's any other president in the world that has the enormous powers that a Nigerian president has. It is frightening the amount of power a Nigerian president has. It is frightening. Literally. That's why people are not collecting the old notes because the president has not said a word. Yeah. If the president...
Despite the court order.
See, the court order should have ended this conversation.
Yeah.
Because that's the highest court in the land. It should, in theory, have the same power as the president. Remember, there are three arms of government and none is supposedly bigger than the other. That's our government 101. The legislature, the judiciary, and the executive. The Supreme Court is one arm of that government. They've given a ruling that the old notes will remain legal tender until the 31st of December. Ideally, in a sane society, that should be it. But Nigeria is not a sane society. And that's why businesses, banks, and everybody is literally waiting for the president, or at least his surrogates, to say something. And I think it is the height of irresponsibility. And I have no apologies for using that word. It's the height of irresponsibility that the president, his media aides, have said absolutely nothing,
nothing actually.
In 10 days nothing. Since that court ruling was done. It's the height of irresponsibility because people are suffering. People are dying. You know, you heard that call. Someone
That's
called
right.
LA today.
That's right.
I saw that news. I think it was yesterday. Was it 2 days ago?
I was shocked.
I was heartbroken.
I couldn't believe it.
I was heartbroken, you know, that literally a presenter, because he could not get cash, but reportedly trekking to work, you know. Now, we don't know what may have caused the death.
Hold that thought. We need to head out. Let's take this break. Lagos will be back.
The numbers are out. And Nigeria Info is your number one station for talk.
Number one.
Listen on the air and online via mobile app. Search Nigeria Info FM on Google Play Store and iOS App Store. Download the app and have us with you wherever you go. 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.
There are also those that need this to even purchase drugs. We've not talked about those ones. There are those that need this to give to their kids to go to school. We've not talked about those ones. I mean, the kids cannot be given ATM now to go to school.
Mm-mm.
You know how you give your child feeding money to go to school and then, you know, just to feed in school. But you can't do that anymore now because there's no cash is gold. Like, it's insane. And you have traders who have their wares. They don't have, I mean, these people just have how many bottles of Ufama. People go inside shopping malls now to just buy a bottle of water because, of course, they're going to use their card, right? But because there's that guy hawking in traffic who people can't buy from anymore.
Sadly,
because they don't have cash.
I had someone dashed me 20 naira a few days ago.
Yeah.
I collected it. I just put it in my wallet because I knew that I probably would need it or somebody would need it. Guess what? 2-3 days later, one of my colleagues in the newsroom couldn't buy water. Literally couldn't buy water because no money to buy water.
No cash.
And the person selling water close by did not want to take transfer or POS. I just looked into my wallet and gave my colleague the 29. He was able to buy pure water to drink. That's just a typical of example of how bad things have gone for a lot of persons. People have issues accessing healthcare because, you know, you can't buy...
I heard a story. I'm not sure how true it is, but let me say here. that some hospitals don't even take transfer. They don't take.
So I heard.
It's cash.
So I heard. Which
oh
is,
no, that
which,
that
which
I hope
is ridiculous.
I hope it's not true.
I hope too.
I
can confirm
it's not true.
But I've heard those stories, and so just imagine the kind of ridiculous situation people have been placed in. And instead of the Central Bank of Nigeria to at least have something to say about it, Ofuma, calm down. I'm calming down so that I won't use the word I would have used if I was in the newsroom. Central Bank is putting out a statement about debunking fake news about Emefiele and the president-elect, Bola Tinubu. Literally.
So they're not talking about the cash crunch.
Literally, almost all the responses are insults. People are on Twitter, people are going, haywire and bonkers.
Okay, so this statement came out when? This morning?
9/11, just about 20 minutes ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Central Bank of Nigeria debunks fake news. The attention of the CBN has been drawn to a story published in the Nation newspaper of Monday, March 13th, 2023, alleging that the governor, Emefiele, has launched a fresh plot against president-elect. The aforementioned story went further to allege that the governor has made a certain amount of money available to a candidate, blah, 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 blah. Basically.
So nothing about the cash.
They are
crunch.
Debunking a story put out on the Nation newspaper about the governor of the Central Bank planning. But the only thing people want to hear from the CBN is whether or not 500 naira, 1,000 naira old notes still remain legal tender. To be fair to the CBN, and this is me trying to be as professional as I can be, they were not joined in that suit.
True.
So maybe that's the alibi that the CBN can hold. See, after all, we were not joined in that suit. Mm. Whatever pronouncements that was made by the Apex Court technically maybe doesn't affect us. Okay, I can understand if that's the case. But how about the presidency? How about the president? Because the presidency, the federal government was joined in that suit.
That's right.
Their lawyer literally after the Supreme Court judgment came out and told journalists or newsmen after the verdict that his client should obey the court ruling.
So I want to ask, is it that they don't see what could come out of this? Because the governors are planning to go to court again to sue the AGF, to yep. sue Emefiele. Mm. They're giving them tomorrow, Tuesday, as an ultimatum to allow people spend 500, 1,000 naira notes. And you would wonder that, is it that they don't see what... Also in the news, we're hearing that the country has lost trillions, about 20 or so, for our economy ever since this started, right? And this, to me, should be the job of the CBN, because it's the job of the CBN to look after the economy of the country, right? And the economy is going on a downward spiral because of a policy, and they are not still saying anything.
Because they don't care. That's the word. They don't care. So as independent as the CBN ought to be, it still needs the president's consent. Let's not beat about the bush. Which is why I might not direct a lot of my anger to the CBN. Because remember that in the broadcast that the president gave some weeks ago, he told us in unmistaken terms that he gave the approval for this policy. So Emefiele was not acting on his own as CBN governor. He was acting on the mandate given to him by the president. And again, I say it without any form of apology. It is the height of irresponsibility. No words, no better words to explain it. From the president and his cabinet and his media executives, that 10 days after the ruling, not a word, not even, okay, we have heard the judgment. Our lawyers are studying it.
Are studying the judgment, which usually be the norm.
Do you get?
At least respond.
Do you get nothing? Nada. Zilch. Not a word. 10 days after. and the country is sinking into abyss. Sheriff, that's what annoys me about the February 25th presidential election. Trust me. That's the anger I have. Because for me, I believe that Nigerian elections should be an avenue for people in government, for referendum for people in government, such that if you do well, you don't need to
you don't need
to be running helter skelter or be doing photo ops, 2 weeks to election for people to vote you. Let's not go too far. In the build up to the 2011 elections here in Lagos, there was the alleged attempt by the powers that be to deny Babatunde Fashola, a second term. Lagosians came out on the streets. Literally, Lagosians were on the streets protesting, saying, no, it cannot happen. Why? They saw the good works of the governor in those first 4 years. They saw it. It was evident. We did not have this issue of Igbo versus Yoruba. At the time, we really didn't have it, because everybody could literally see that the governor had done well. Do you get this works? They speak for itself. You don't need tribal politics. Again, going back to our first con, you don't need all of that if you do well. So I hoped and I believe that Beavers and introduction, was meant to ensure that if you do well, you get people's vote. If you go there and 4 years after you are doing nonsense, you still come back to the same polls and a lot of people will vote you out because the votes will count. But the reason a lot of our leaders do what they like and don't bother is because, to a large extent, elections don't matter. They always know that one way or the other, they will find ways to allegedly rig themselves back into power. So they don't care about your feelings. Have you been to Aso Rock before?
Mm-mm.
Okay. When you go there, or whenever you go there, you will understand. See, they live in a bubble. They live in a bubble in such a way that they don't understand what it is again for the ordinary man on the street. The day I got into the government house in River State, Port Harcourt, when we were there, I got a sense of why governors and politicians can literally take decisions without putting people into consideration. Because they have 24 hours light. There's a petrol station inside government house, River State. And I hear that's how it is in most of the states. I don't know. But at least I saw one for myself. There's a petrol station inside government house in River State.
If you like, have fuel. If you like, don't have fuel.
You're on your own. You go and queue in your petrol stations. You're on your own. The governor, his commissioners, and all the work, they don't queue like you. There's a petrol station that services them. So when you are shouting fuel scarcity, you're on your own, sheriff. When you are talking about not having light and the heat wave at night is a problem, you're on your own. Because when there's no light, the diesel is powering their generators, and it's not one gen. So if it has an issue, there's another one that has come up. If for any reason it has a problem, the next flight out of the country to go and chill in one hotel,
Jakpa Street,
go spend 1 week, come back. These guys live in a bubble. So the president does not understand how, like you told me earlier today.
How could they not have understood the fact that this cash crunch is affecting the economy that they claimed to have fought for, to build, to invest in? How could they not have understood that?
Because sadly, over the last 8 years, we have an aloof president. I'm sorry, but it is what it is. Buhari rarely cares. He'll tell you he doesn't know. Again, because the people around him tell him only what they want to say. That most times, the people around the president don't give the true picture. Did you not hear the president brought... See, that one is one that gets me... It gets on my nerves every time I think about it. During the NSAS protest, The president made a broadcast, and he said in clear terms that the ENSA's protest was an attempt to overthrow his government. Did you not hear it? He said it in the broadcast. Sheriff,
because that seemed to be what he might have been told at the time.
That's what he was told. That's the narrative he was sold by people in and around him. And so he came out publicly and told you that. Sheriff, when he said that thing, I think it was the headphone that I was holding. I hit it. That's how angry I was. But again, you and I know what the NSAS protest was about. Mm. Yes, maybe there are some people who try to take advantage of it here and there. But largely, that protest was about brutality that Nigerians had suffered in the hands of the Nigerian police. That's the end story of. But the narrative that was sold to the president, which even made him come out publicly and tell you, was that, oh, people that want to literally overthrow his government. How? Were they army officers? How are they going to do it? It just tells you that's just a sign or an example of the kind of country we live in. They live in a bubble. They care less about the woman in the village, in my village in Uzoro, in Delta State, whose plantain has gone so bad.
Did you see the video of the plantain? You saw the video of the plantain?
I did. It's sad. Sheriff, it is sad. People can't have monies to go to work again because there's no cash.
I don't even know how petty traders manage to survive these days.
And then we are also, like, as we're talking about the government, let's also talk about ourselves. We Nigerians, we always find ways to exploit ourselves when we have these kind of situations. Imagine I want to withdraw 10,000 and I have to pay 4,000.
Oh my word.
To withdraw 10,000. God forbid, Ufuma will not do it. I'd rather not have cash. Because I'm not giving you my 4,000 naira.
Almost half of what?
Almost half of it. 40% of it. You know, but that's what we're doing. Where you say, don't blame them. Because to a large extent, they also bought these monies from some persons who are supposed, in the banks, who are supposed to give out these monies to Nigerians. But you know that a lot of these POS businesses are owned by bankers. Mm. You know, so it's a trickle-down effect. The CBN releases some money, some bankers hoard it, sell it to POS merchants, the POS merchants themselves add their own gain on top. Because if I buy 10,000 for, if I use 12,000 to buy 10,000,
yeah,
of course I want to sell, I want to add to get my own profit. Mm. And you see the trickle effect it's had on the average man that cannot pay for his bus fare to go to work, you know, that cannot buy something as simple as tomato.
That's right.
To cook.
That's right. I know people who, you know, just by during childhood that have told me that they couldn't even cook. Like, they couldn't literally cook at home because they need to go to the tomato cellar. How do you expect a tomato cellar to have you? Like, they couldn't go and buy a tomato cellar.
Some have resorted to going
pepper
to,
from tomato cellar
to malls
to cook.
Like my friend that just walked in. My friend, I'm not anyone, has gone to the mall to buy three seeds of tomato for 1,000 naira.
Oh my God.
I thought he would call me.
That's, if you have money, you go to the mall to go and buy three tomatoes for 1,000 naira.
So how many seeds of tomato will you now buy to cook a pot of stew? Maybe Onora can tell us.
Don't call Onora on this because I think I'm getting frustrated.
Yeah.
I'm getting frustrated.
We are all frustrated.
But the issue is that it seems the malls are people cashing out now.
Hmm.
If you enter some of these malls now, you now see that. You see the crowd there.
The crowd.
You see,
yes,
people that are,
yes,
not market, exactly, not because they want them to be there,
but because there's a mode of payment that is accessible to them.
POS. I picked milk just yesterday. And I said, no, the price in the market is so and so. Two guys just approached me. You know, go buy and here. This place will collect from, you go use your POS pay, you go use your card pay. Yeah. You go buy and if you go there now, even if they say, like, how you go get cash? When they said that, I answered it. They say, wow. So this is now the mentality.
Yeah.
Sadly.
And it's working.
So for persons like me, over the last, I would say over the last 7-8 years or even more, I have learned to go cashless. And I've said this repeatedly. I've learned to go cashless for a very long time. So most times I actually buy my groceries and things I need from supermarkets or the mall. I know it's more expensive,
yeah,
you know, but to some extent, it saves me the stress of going to the normal market, you know, to move around and all of that. So it's less stressful for me and more expensive, but I've learned to do that. So I would say for someone like me, the whole cashless policy really hasn't hit me that hard, because I want petrol. I go to the petrol station very close to the mall here in VI and I buy. Stay in the queue, but I still buy. I pay with POS. I want the milk that I don't know what I was talking about, or chewing gum, or literally almost everything I need in my house. I go to the mall, you know, or any of the supermarkets to buy. Even the water I drink, you get. So in that sense, it really hasn't affected me. However, the cooking part. So over the last 1 or 2 months, the rate at which I would have cooked has been reduced to the barest minimum, because I literally cannot get cash to go to that local market where I need to buy the tomato and the pepper to make stew. You know, I've had to eat a lot out. You know, I've had to go to restaurants around VI, and you and I know how expensive they can be.
I don't
be.
Know. It's only you that know.
Yeah, it's only you that know. But the issue now is that we are actually doing this, and it seems it's only those that can afford it.
Sadly.
It's only those that can afford
and
it.
And instead of the CBN to talk, they're telling me about fake news.
Yes, I heard what you were saying about the fake news, and I got the tweet. I have to say, are you sure it's from CBN? I went to their site, and I saw it in the first page in their site. I said, wow. So this is even what is actually giving them concern now. One of us
in the other doing
yeah, see, look at what these people are talking. I said, where? He said, CBN. I said, send it to me. When he just sent it, and I checked, I said, okay, this is a Twitter. Let me go to their site to be very sure that they
it actually came from.
So when I now did a double check, I saw the thing, and I said, wow. Instead of CBN coming out now to tell us this is what is happening, although, like you said earlier on, they are not joined in the suit. But even if they are not joined, you see, this is something that has to do with them. If they are coming out to tell us we are about migrating to a cashless policy, we know that it is the cashless policy issue that we are talking about. Then what are the modalities you put in place to ensure that those in the villages, those in areas that don't have banks,
especially those in the villages, the ones hard hit too.
Yes,
the ones in the villages,
dark spot. There's no internet facility. Even if you have the POS, even if you decide to send the POS to some areas, it will not operate. So
the person that helps me clean my house, you know, on a weekly basis or every 4 or 5 days or thereabout, did that since Thursday. Today's Monday. I've not been able to pay the person.
Oh my.
Because my bank app either will refuse
that's
to
another,
open.
That's another conversation entirely. That thing can frustrate the life out of you.
See, I nearly wash plates which day.
That would have been very interesting. Would have trended.
Nigeria UFO presenter.
Wash plates.
Nearly, but I'm not telling you that I'm washing plates. This one is nearly washed. Eh? Nearly washed plates.
Yeah, washing plate.
I'm washing my plate that I used to eat. I hope that's what you actually have in mind.
No. Not at all. Let's go to the telephone lines. We'll take a few calls as we go on the show this morning. Two big issues. We just try to take things easy, things is slow, laugh about these things, because look, it's quite hard, and the realities are, you know, the realities out there. So yeah, it's quite hard on people what we're going through. Good morning to you,
Sheriff. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Yes, Femi, I spoke on the first issue already, yeah. So I just wanted to speak on the other one.
All right.
Yes, the cash crunch thing. The most unfortunate part is the Nigerian who would not like what the president says over 8 years and all that are suddenly obeying the president and not giving them in to what the court is saying. So it seems like until the president speaks before we take action, the same Nigerian people who would increase the price of any product at the slightest thought of fuel price increasing are now waiting for instructions. The instructions we are not waiting for since until the president speaks that, okay, you can increase your price. There's no price regulation, so everybody does whatever they want. So we are now waiting for instruction. So this is just the funny thing about we Nigerians. Thank you.
Thank you, Femi. Thank you. Let's take another call. Good morning to you. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Yes, miss. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Yes, miss. We can hear you.
Yeah, but I think this morning is on the...
You're not really clear.
My take is on the Naira policy.
Okay, all right.
I don't know if there's any other way that Nigerians can cry before they yell. You can imagine having children not being able to go back to school because the policy is not working. People who owe you money cannot pay because they're not getting money. Single parents are not able to cope. What more does this government want from us before they hear us? Before they hear that Nigerians are crying? What sort of government is this? What sort of a government is this? What is the plan exactly in the long run? What is the plan? Do they want everyone to die of starvation? I don't understand it because it's biting too hard. It's biting too hard, Mr. Sherry. It's too much to bear. I don't know what the government wants, but this is too much to bear. I'm telling you, it's too much to bear.
I know.
There's nobody to cry to. You have an investment that should give you money to survive with your children, and then nothing is working because of one stupid policy by a government that's not listening to its people. Mr. Sherry, it's a terrible situation that I am in right now.
I'm sorry.
And I don't know where to go to. I don't know who to cry to. This is my pain this morning. I've been trying to reach you this morning.
I'm really sorry.
The system is not working. Let the government hear us. The system is not working. Thank you.
I'm really sorry. I am really, really and deeply sorry.
That's heartbreaking to listen to. It's really heartbreaking.
It hit me really hard when I saw that plantain video. Like, those are people's investments. Wasting away. People's investment. And you know how plantain is. You know how bananas are.
Yeah,
you know,
a few days,
they're gone.
And we don't have even preservation or ways to preserve them.
We don't have that.
Had it been, has been in place, okay.
We don't have that.
Take them to this place, then maybe have the amount that is going to be paid. Then the government is going to pick it up.
Just the morning, someone sent a message, 200 crates of eggs buried because nobody is buying them. No cash. We'll have to leave it here today. Let's keep it together, people. Let's keep it together. Ufoma, thank you. Honora, thank you. I'm Sherry. Hope you know your radio tomorrow. Bye-bye.
99.3 Nigeria.
And I want to assume that you would run because I want to give the listeners context for the conversation.
In 2019, you were running mate to Atiku Abubakar. What did you learn then that you will not repeat this time?
Yes, when is the president coming out to address us?
There's a few things. One, I have a burden and a passion for young people.
The fact that you have elected a man does not mean then you begin to order him around. The president will do whatever is good for the country at any given time.
Mr. Adesina, isn't the president responsible to the people?
What should the next president do to root out stakeholders who are complicit?
You fire those that need to be fired, are fired.
Looking like the brand new Chelsea, attacking with so much fluidity. Now, what can you say about that, Martin? I know you follow Chelsea quite closely.
I live close to the Chelsea training ground. That's what you mean by that. I'm not a Chelsea.